Quaker Meeting in Portland, Oregon.
You can find more information about our community at westhillsfriends.org.
As a Quaker community, we encourage everyone to share from their hearts,
especially as it pertains to God's leading in their lives.
These words are shared into a community that values the opportunity to respond and dialogue about what is said.
The responses and dialogue are not included in this recording.
The views expressed in this content are solely those of the original contributor
and do not necessarily speak for the entire West Hills Friends community.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Michael was born in Gary, Indiana. One of his earliest memories was his dad endlessly reminding him that he had a fat nose. His father abused him throughout his childhood, a period of time he described as extremely isolating and lonely. Steveland was born 6 weeks premature in Michigan. He was placed in an oxygen-rich incubator, which caused the development of his eyes to cease. He would be blind for the rest of his life. Cindy was born in Brooklyn, but was raised in Queens by an abusive stepfather. One day, she fled New York City and crossed over into Canada, where she hid out and survived on her own in the wilderness before finding a job at IHOP. Bruce was born in Long Branch, New Jersey. He loved music, especially the Beatles. He wanted to play guitar just like them. But with his father struggling with mental health and his mother bringing in the family income, they struggled to survive. In 1964, his mother took out a loan to purchase him a $60 Kent guitar. Michael, Steveland, Cindy, and Bruce found themselves in the same room in late January of 1985. We have video footage of this meeting, and I'd like to play that for you now. Let's hope it works.
Incredible.
We could feel the energy in the room was really high.
Now, Ray and Willie out in the thing.
But at the same time, under it is a low hum of competition. The egos were still there. Let's not pretend that they weren't there.
Celebrities can be very difficult when they're surrounded by managers, agents, and glam squad. But they were not in that environment. The biggest stars in music found it disarming. They seemed almost timid.
It was like first day of kindergarten.
Okay, guys, can we have everybody clear out so we can make it? Please. Hello, hello, hello. Listen, guys.
Quincy had to pull all of these kids together.
We are the world.
It's probably 60 or 70 people in the room. It was getting pretty ripe. My lights were big 5,000 watt fire breathing instruments. So it got very warm in here. And that added to the tension.
You had all the lighting guys and four cameramen. And so you had to be really careful to not get your cables tangled up, and you had to be quiet.
Guys, you gotta keep it quiet. We gotta stop making noise during takes, please.
We're shooting the video and
putting the song together at the same time. Can anything go wrong? Absolutely. We were flying by the seat of our pants. The clock is ticking. Quincy's worrying about the big picture. My job was, if there was any problems on the floor, solve it.
I mean, you change.
No, I think that he's brighter.
I feel like everyone was singing brighter.
Just brighter?
Better, brighter.
I don't want to open the can of worms. Stay with brighter.
You want to feel better or brighter? Brighter is the one everybody's leaning to, right?
Lionel Richie is the guy to bring everyone together.
I'm walking around to each little camp, putting out fires.
And he was on adrenaline. He was just nonstop, but he's like that anyway. He has stories to tell. Let's do this. Let me tell you something. He's making people laugh. He's just making the water flow in the right way.
One line you can never use in life. I'm not sure about this. What do you think?
I better have to invite you.
We have 47 artists. If you say that, you'll have 47 different versions of We Are the World. So my job was to make sure, under no circumstances, do we veer off what it is.
Willie Mongol,
Stevie said, I think we need to have some Swahili somewhere in this song. I think we should sing Tutu Wai No No Willy Moingu. If we do this, we're going to run out of time. And if we run out of time, it won't be good.
I was back in the corner of the room, just happened to be pretty close to Waylon Jennings, and I just heard him go, well, ain't no good old boy ever sung Swahili. I think I'm out of here.
Just a good old boy. Never meaning no harm.
Waylon walks out of the door. I'm not dealing with it. I don't know what that means, but I am not going to say it. And we lost Waylon right there.
Michael, Steve Lind, who you know as Stevie, Cindy, and Bruce shared the same place in Los Angeles alongside Bob Dylan, Billy Joel, Tina Turner, Lionel Richie, Kenny Rogers, Waylon Jennings, briefly, Ray Charles, and dozens other superstar musicians to record the song We Are the World. A project spurred on by newfound success in mobilizing celebrities to raise awareness and funds for causes. Ethiopia at the time was experiencing a famine which would claim the lives of 1 million people and displacing millions of others. The recording of We Are the World went on to win Grammys and raised $80 million in relief for African nations experiencing famine. But as we just watched, the recording, which went well into the early morning hours, almost imploded from the ego energy in the room. A few weeks ago, as I was driving, I sighed out loud. My partner asked me, "What was that for?" I was unprepared for the question. Sighs, as they often do, accidentally externalize an internal struggle. I replied, "Do you ever consider how absolutely bonkers it is that we even attempt church?" My last message, I quoted Paul, who was left with the challenge of nurturing the Christian church in its infancy. Jesus, rather unhelpfully, started a movement, and then shot himself up to heaven, leaving us a vague charge in Matthew 28, 19 through 20, which says, to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and to teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. It seemed as if Jesus thought that would be easy. He left us with two commandments earlier in the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 22, when he says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And what do we read just a few books in the New Testament later? Paul, in his introductions to the new Christian community growing in Corinth, says, I hear there are disagreements among you. And closing that out with, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Perhaps all of those artists thought that when they gathered to sing for starving people in Ethiopia, that it would be effortless and conflict-free. Perhaps we continue to think that when we humans gather as the church, that our shared vision of loving our neighbor and loving God with all our heart, soul, and mind will mean that we will hardly find ourselves in the muck. But whether it be for those starving in Africa or carrying on the spirit of Christ-like love, we do find ourselves in the muck. Watching those musicians in a hot room in the wee hours of the morning, talking over one another, bouncing and pinging their ideas, suggestions, rubbing their temples with frustration and exhaustion, I thought to myself, man, that sure feels like the church sometimes, huh? While I was watching the chaos, I thought, I wonder what Cyndi Lauper has experienced in her life. I wonder what Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen, and Michael Jackson experienced in their early years. I wondered what traumas, what socioeconomic and relational realities they faced that formed them, their personalities, their proclivities, the way they handle conflict, how they feel about rejection. Is it all tied to life experience, to trauma response, to a family story we may not know all the details of? So I looked it up, wondering if I could see their histories as a frame for the way they showed up that night to record We Are the World. Had Bruce's childhood poverty made him more quiet in the presence of these fellow wealthy superstars? Had Cyndi Lauper's time in the Canadian wilderness made her more confident to walk into that room, knowing she had already survived many horrors in her life already? Sometimes I feel like what we're doing here is nearly impossible. Oftentimes I feel anxiety about standing up here and giving these messages. Why? Because how does any community of 100-ish people possibly exist together? Because while I have had the honor of learning many of your stories, I know that each of our personalities, tendencies, and sensitivities have been shaped by known and unknown life experiences. We know that each of us have experienced traumas. Even if not personal, we all witnessed the horrors of 9/11, of school shootings, the Challenger explosion, and countless other culturally traumatizing events. We also know that people may look, talk, or behave in a way that reminds us of those who have hurt us before. We know that sometimes we lash out, perhaps surprising ourselves with the intensity of our anger. How can we possibly carry on as a community with the knowledge that to be in community with one another will certainly mean that we will stumble, bump, and react to one another unpredictably and often? Well, I suppose the best way for us to carry on is to name this reality, to point to it and say, we know this is what being in community means. And knowing that, we go forward with hope that when we are vulnerable and share our stories, we create more space for understanding and grace for one another. It is the privilege of choosing not to be strangers with one another, to be able to speak our truth and love, trusting that our experience will likely interact with the experience of another in ways we cannot imagine. And yet these interactions deepen our capacity for love, for grace, for genuine connection. This is not to say that any of us should remain in places that continually hurt us. As the son of a mother who was told by pastors that it was her duty to remain in an unhealthy marriage, I know how manipulative and destructive it is to encourage someone to remain someplace that's unsafe for them. It feels to me that more than ever, the future of the capital C church depends on us fostering communities where it is safe to be vulnerable with one another. If so, we will learn more about the experiences and challenges we have faced, the experiences that have shaped our gifts, and the experiences we are still tender and healing from. If we can do this, our interactions will be all the more infused with grace. Our growth and healing will be collaborative, creative, and a source of light to a world so in need of communities like this. Dear God, teach us and show us the way. Here are some queries for open worship, friends. How does holding the unknowns of another's story and experience give you more capacity for grace in your relationship? When have you experienced another holding the knowledge of your past challenges in a way that created more space for you to be yourself? How do we create a community where we hold the challenge of learning more about one another with grace?
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We're really happy that so many of you are finding it to be helpful and as a way to stay connected with what's going on with us here at West Hills Friends. If you'd like to stay connected with us in other ways, we have a couple options for you. You can check out our website. It's westhillsfriends.org. There you'll find some more information about who we are as a community. You can also follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook account by just searching for West Hills Friends. You can also follow us on Instagram. We have a Instagram account with the name West Hills Friends. So we hope that you'll get connected with us in other ways. And again, thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast.